Welcome to Bengals Scribe Session, presented by JosephOtto.com and Inquirer Sports. Here, your Bengals beat writers Paul Daner Jr. and Richard Skinner escort you inside the walls of Paul Brown Stadium to hear the news, analysis, and observations unfolding within the team from those documenting it daily. All with the sidecar of snark and absurdity you've come to expect. Let's go. We're about to start a party in here. He's made strums and guitar in here.
Up in the air. Oh, AJ Green makes the catch.
Oh man!
A deflected ball winds up in the hands of AJ Green as the clock hits zero. It's about to get rowdy here, but if you want to fight,
get out of here. We about to tear off the roof. All right, welcome to the latest edition of Scribe Session. Tony Jr., Jeff Skinner here with you. Fresh off a wild and woolly week 8, where the Bengals hold on for a 27-24 victory over the Baltimore Ravens. No lack of excitement. How are you? Any heart palpitations, Skinny?
Nah, you know what? I'm at that stage of life where nothing gets me going a whole lot. You know, good or bad.
It's kind of sad.
I just kind of cruise through life. I will say that all those fine fans that were disguised as empty seats yesterday missed as weird a quarter as you're possibly going to see in the NFL.
Yeah, I was talking about that with a couple people today, and I was trying to think back. I think since I started covering the team in 2010, maybe the as far as wildest pure entertainment value, that and the Green Bay game last year, about the only two that I can think of that were on that level. I mean, that was just the swings from high to low to and just
in the span of, you know what, 7 minutes of game clock, basically.
Yeah. When you go from the moment
the Andy
left-handed fumble. The Gus Frerotte moment when the left-handed pass comes out, all the way through until the offensive pass interference was called.
Well, think about it. Here's all the moments you had. You had the oh no moment of the fumble, yeah, to the oh blank moment of then the touchdown that followed the fumble that put the Ravens up, to the you've got to be blanking kidding me moment of Andy throwing a pick
meltdown,
to then oh wow happy moment for Mohamed Sanu, to oh happy moment we're about to score, to oh gosh it's fourth down, are we ever going to score, yay we did score, to yay we're going to win, to oh no we're not, oh yes we are, oh no we're not. I mean, it was insane.
The fans were the fans that were there were certainly confused.
Yeah.
I mean, not, you know, you that's one of those where you walk out of and just say, okay, what happened, they won, all right, well that's at least there's a winner, because that There's a lot to digest there. We won't go too much into the game. For those of you that are listening later in the week, we'll touch, of course, on we have to touch on the offensive pass interference call, which is the conversation piece of the moment. We'll get into what I think is maybe the most important thing to come out of this, which is Andy Dalton and what he showed at the end. We'll talk about Mohamed Sanu. We'll get into the health of this team, which is starting to get a little bit healthier, just a little bit, but they're only one or two injuries away from that sliding back in the NFL. But it's getting better.
And you have two games in a span of 5 days coming up.
So a lot of bad can happen. But so there's a lot for us to get into there. We'll have all of that, and we'll bring you a couple other plays. But first, what do you think? Should we dive into the
Let's
angry
go for
Ravens?
It.
The Ravens are not real thrilled with Cleet Blackman's crew. Cleet Blakeman's crew, I apologize.
Yes.
Who, by the way, did you know?
He's only 15 years old because he looked it.
Not 15 years old. He actually, his crew had only thrown one offensive pass interference flag all year, fewest amongst any crew in football. So it's not like
they go hunting for it.
It's not like they're looking for
right,
it.
Right, right. And you can see that with some crews. I mean, you just may have a group that's they've decided they're going to make those calls. It was not 1,000% blatant, but it was a pretty blatant penalty, especially in a year where they've said they are looking for any of that stuff. A lot of it has gone against the defense this year. We saw one early in the second half, or sometime in the second half. And you and I aren't overly critical. I mean, we were always busy and we got stuff to do and we try to be impartial. But there was a call on Leon Hall, if you remember,
yeah,
Paul, where he was called for illegal contact. And I'm still trying to figure out where he even ever touched the wide receiver on that play. So, you know, I think the official called it as he saw it. And, you know, you look at the replay as a Ravens fan. I know the jaundiced view there says, oh, come on, you can't call that. But I heard a lot of impartial people in the last 24 hours or so, including some former NFL wide receivers who thought it was interference on Steve Smith.
Yeah, and Senior. Mike Pereira came out, who's just very good as the spokesman for
the
former.
He leans towards officials a lot of times, let's be fair.
He does, but I think he's still relatively impartial where he would call it if he and that was the correct call. Now
it was not worthy of a meltdown like the Baltimore Ravens announcers had, however. That was a meltdown of epic proportions.
It really was. Do we have that?
I believe we do.
We do have that audio?
I believe we do.
All right, let's bring you the audio of the Baltimore Ravens announcers completely
losing
their mind.
Bengals with a four-man front. Six defensive backs. Flacco, pocket collapsing, running to his right, trying to extend the play, heaves it deep, looking for Steve Smith Sr. He makes the catch at the 20, spins free, 15, flag is down, 10, 5, touchdown Ravens! Steve Smith from Joe Flacco for 80 yards.
No!
But they're going to call it offensive interference. You've got to be kidding me.
Yeah, by the way, that was Quadre Ismail, for those who may not know who that was. It was the color announcer. And that's the play-by-play guy is Jerry Sandusky, no relation to the other Jerry Sandusky. They actually spell it differently. But, look, I understand. I, when you're announcing for your hometown team, obviously, there's a little homerism there at times. That went over the top. Agree?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. That was...
Because it wasn't so egregious that it could... It wasn't like...
It was clearly you're looking through different glasses.
Correct.
Because there's no way you could watch that and say, how could they possibly have called that?
Right. There was a very good possibility they called that, and it was, at the end of the day, the right call.
Johnny Harbaugh was not too thrilled with the call.
No, he was
not. He refused to comment. He said he was not allowed to answer that question when asked about it after the game, obviously.
And then
he couldn't answer that without getting fined. And then on Monday, he went ahead and just kind of went off in that direction.
Yeah, he also did not comment specifically on the penalty itself because he's smart enough to know he would get fined for that. But he called it the greatest play he'd ever seen.
Yeah.
Basically saying, well, white guys did a great job, everything that they could do, other than, and I'm going to put this in parentheses because he didn't say this part, other than the fact that they blew the call.
Yeah,
I mean it was a smart way for him to answer it, to be honest with you.
He didn't need. Yeah, he said all he needed to say without calling out an official.
Says
at all.
His guys will make plays like that again. To which I wish I could have written this because I wasn't writing an opinion piece. But honestly, if your guys do that again, guess what? They're gonna have touchdowns wiped off the board again.
Again, yeah. I mean, you can't. No matter what time it is in the game, if a guy – what did it for me, and I posted this vine on my blog on Monday, which what does it for me is when the left hand goes inside
Correct.
The shoulder pad.
Exactly right.
I mean, listen, if you go inside the shoulder pad and there's a yank and the guy falls – That's all you need to see.
And before you think, well, it was little tiny 5'9", 185 pound or whatever he is, Steve Smith, and big 6'4", 215 pound George Iloka. Steve Smith is a strong, strong guy. I mean, don't think for a second he can't shove somebody down one handed because he's capable of it and he did. Could you call in for a little bit of a flop? Maybe. But I'll say this. Iloka got up not as a guy like, oh gosh, he got up. He right away, because I had the glasses
on. He looked over.
He looked over like, hey, there's no question.
Are you kidding me? Yeah.
And the flag came out. He knew it. And he said as much after the game.
It would have been stupid for Iloka to have dropped back and tried to sell a flop there rather than
Agreed.
Just jump up
well,
and knock the ball down.
I think it tells you that Steve Smith is that strong. I think you and I were talking to Dave Lapp today. I think Lapp says he benches over 300 pounds. That's unheard of for a wide receiver, for goodness sakes.
I mean, and I'm not claiming that it was that maybe once he realized he was going down, he didn't.
And he was off balance a little bit to begin with,
too. Fine. But, I mean, to think that he would go back, if you look at it, he clearly stops, turns to look up, and he bends his knees to ready to go jump and knock it down. And as he's doing that, that's when the yank comes, and he falls backward, which is a nice play by Steve Smith, to be honest. If you got to try – what chance do you really have there?
If not, Iloka jumps up and probably either picks it off or bats it down.
He put the referee in the position to have to make that
the call.
And he ended up doing it.
How crazy is that Steve Smith catches an 80-yarder in the opener, and it should have been – well, it would have been the game winner. Gets wiped out when A.J. Green catches a touchdown. Then the other one yesterday – exactly 80 yards again, and wiped out by a penalty against the same team in the same year.
In the same year, and what would have been the same type of circumstances to go ahead late in the game. Steve Smith is a beast in that way. I mean, he rises up in those big moments. I mean, he does seem to find a way. You gotta tip your cap to that guy.
Yep.
So the result of this, though,
is a huge win.
It's huge. We talked about this last week on the Crossroads, our Bone Thugs podcast here, which I'm still so happy that we ended up trotting out Bone Thugs Army last week. But it was a Crossroads game where think about where it would be now, especially after the results you saw this weekend.
Do you know where you would be right now, believe it or not?
Last place.
Last place in the division.
In the AFC North behind Cleveland, who is 4-3. The Ravens and Steelers are both tied at 5-3, and the Bengals are 4-2-1 ahead of them by percentage points. If you lose that, you would be staring down the face of about 40-some days since you'd had a win. And you saw it today. We were in the locker room on Monday. And the palpable difference in just the way the guys were carrying themselves, in the way winning changes everything. And I just can't imagine how it would have been today, this whole week, if that would have been yet another loss and just another round of finger pointing and another round of having to answer the questions of what is going wrong and figure out what is going wrong. I think that. That's why we called it a crossroads, because you would have seen – I really honestly think you would have seen this team go down to a dark path, even if they would have won against Jacksonville.
And Cleveland, probably.
And even Cleveland.
I agree with you.
Because then it would have taken that
road swing of a loss there to start it all over
and
again.
And there still wouldn't be a win to really point to. Correct. To say, well, we can do this. Just to follow this blueprint, you know. I just think it meant a lot more than that, and it did have a big, big play in the standings where you're not 3-3-1 staring at Baltimore at 6-2.
Well, because let's face facts, those last seven games you will not be able to chase. All you're going to hope those last seven games is just maintain first place, and that sounds easy, but you know, you're not going to make up ground those last seven games. It's just not going to happen. You just better hope those last seven games you've gotten yourself to 6-2-1, which we thought they'd be in that, you know, about that vein, and then just hang on for dear life, because you could play your best football of the season those last seven games and win three games, and still go, we played pretty good football there. And honestly, there may be a case of you look and go, hey, they played really well enough to where I really feel good about this team going in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So that's how big yesterday was on so many fronts.
I mean, you start thinking, New Orleans, for anybody that was doubting how good they would
at
be.
At home,
they're so tough there. After you saw them smoke Green Bay on Sunday night. I mean, you saw all you needed to see that New Orleans in the dome is going to be New Orleans in the dome.
Absolutely.
With Drew Brees and Jimmy Graham and Brandon Cooks and everybody they have down there. They are no joke. I mean, Aaron Rodgers and a very good Green Bay team just went down there and just got absolutely hosed.
Yep.
And that game is going to be tough. Houston and J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney healthy now. They still have quarterback issues, but, I mean, you know, you're still going to Houston. Bengals fans are aware of how challenging that can be. Tampa sucks. That's fine.
But don't have a letdown.
Yeah, right. I mean, and you're on the road. And, oh, by the way, you have Pittsburgh twice, who just posted a 50-burger on the team that you couldn't score on the previous week. This league is insane.
Oh, and Denver's coming, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, by the way,
Peyton Manning. Going to Cleveland.
I mean, it is.
It's a beast.
So to think that the games that you have at home, you have to win them when you have the chance.
And that was the theme for us when we did our preseason picks, you and I, in our special section. You had to put yourself record-wise in position. Not even just so much the way you're playing or any of that stuff, because that's hard to – but record-wise, going into those last seven, you better put yourself – I think I said you better be no worse than 6-3. and you would hopefully be 7-2. Well, the tie came into play, so 6-2-1 is probably where they're going to be, which puts you in a position. Then if you don't get it done, that's on you. I mean, you're playing good teams, that's on you.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. And so now you have your a little stretch where it's time to make hay now. So you have Jacksonville on Sunday, who's just dreadful. And so that by all intent and purpose, that should be a win. If it's not, you've got bigger issues if you can't find a way to beat that team. And then you have you're going to be seeing a 5-3 Cleveland team coming in here, assuming they can beat Tampa Bay.
Yep.
Which they have lost to Jacksonville, so it's not
impossible. They haven't played as many on the road, and they haven't been as good on the road. I mean, at home they compete with everybody. I mean, they just do.
So you that game I think could have a lot of intrigue to it for sure. It'll be fun for that rivalry to be interesting again. But those are two very you will be favored. The Bengals will be favored in both of those games. One very heavily.
I think the second one almost by a touchdown.
You think by a touchdown?
I do.
I think that's much. If I would spread it, you'd make it a 7. I think I would make that a 5. Okay. 5. I put it at a 5-point spread.
Opens at 5, and the wise guys take it up to 7.
The wise guys take it up to 7. That's fair. Regardless, if you can pull in those two winnable games and win games at home in your building against teams that aren't that great with questionable quarterbacks, you're sitting there right where you want to be at 6-2-1 going into your tough stretch
and
down,
possibly down being the healthiest you've been all year with Green. You're hoping
right,
back,
hoping Green coming eight, back
with Eifert. You're hoping back.
Yes.
If that stays.
Brandon Thompson.
That's a big part. Yeah.
A number of players that you're hoping to get.
Perfect. Further removed, you hope, from concussions and tackling issues.
Geno Atkins, you hope, starting to recover from his ACL injury. I mean, you start to look up at that point.
Correct.
And you start to feel what this team was supposed to be from the very beginning coming into play. Now, it's a perfect segue into what I think was to me the biggest takeaway of this weekend was Andy Dalton, because what you have now, due to all of this, the just attrition at playmaker, was a first half of the season where Andy Dalton and Mohamed Sanu just kept you afloat. I mean, you had a defense falling apart at the seams. You had
very little running game.
You had no receivers, and Andy Dalton, I know people don't want to hear this because they like to hate on the guy, has almost carried this team.
And you know, I had people, I'm sure you did too, after the Indy game that said, well, Tom Brady can carry guys. You and I, that's the one nice thing about it, if you're at a game, as we are, and you can see a lot of different things going on, as opposed to watching it on TV. TV's great. I love football on TV. But you could literally see no receiver getting open in that game at any point in time. And if they did, it was by the time that happened, people were right in his lap and in his face. Yesterday, he and even in the Carolina game, and I know, look, those aren't, you know, the Colts-Carolina is not an apples-to-apples comparison, because I think the Colts, even though they got 51 hung on them, are a pretty good team. Whatever happened there. You saw yesterday, I mean, when he had to make a play to Sanu, he did. When he had to trust Greg Little, he did. And that's the part I'm with you on this. I mean, the guy literally has kind of kept you afloat while not having the weapons around him. He's not Tom Brady. He's not Aaron Rodgers. But he's done some really dynamic things when he's had to do it.
He finds ways to win. And I know that sounds like a cliche, but he really is. He has been a winning quarterback. He has ways of helping the team win. Case in point, this past Sunday. I mean, listen, Andy Dalton is going to make some stupid plays. He's going to miss some throws. He has his limitations. But what he's great at is what they needed him to do Sunday. What they needed him to do a lot of days was when you have a Gus Frat moment, when you have a pick after that, when everything appears to be melting down, when the play before this was a slightly underthrown cross to Greg Little.
Yeah. That would have picked up a chunk of yards.
I was going through the replay just to go through and look at some plays in particular. He was getting rocked with boos. The boos came out right on that after that drop by Little, because that was that times about 15 is what it would have been if they wouldn't have gone on that drive, by the way. But with all of that happening, with the meltdown, drop back, shake two tacklers, climb the pocket, right as you're about to get hit, throw on the run in the middle of the pocket and give your guy a chance against two corners who, quite frankly, are not on his level because Baltimore was really
they
banged
were hurt.
Up.
Yeah, they were hurt.
And they're in their secondary, and he goes and makes a play for you. I thought the most underrated thing about that entire play, which was the play of the game for the most part, no one was really talking about what Dalton did back there. I mean, to avoid Mosley on one side, Suggs on the other, and go up into the heat of the pocket. There was still
keep eyes downfield.
Keep eyes downfield. Throw on the run with some pace to get it out there right as you're about to get popped by the corner who was blitzing, who, oh, by the way, he slid the protection over to keep it. Bodine and Bowling got crushed, got whipped on that play, and Dalton shook them both and threw on the run. A lot of, by the way, those are all like three things that Andy Dalton's not supposed to be able right. to do, according to the critics. Makes that throw. I thought that spoke volumes. And then to continue that drive on, make all the right checks, all the right plays, and when you can't push it in there with the running game, sit there from the two, call the audible at the last second, call your own number and sneak it in. Those things I just don't feel like they get enough play. They don't show up at Pro Football Focus. They don't show up in the stat book. It's that type of stuff, though, is what Andy Dalton is very good at, and the team really, really believes in him.
Yeah. 34-18-1 as a starter.
Yeah.
Or 34-21, I'm sorry, as a starter. Mm. That's pretty good. Yeah. That's pretty darn good.
Yeah, and you can call and you talk about his defense. Well, then to what do you attribute 4-2-1 this year with a defense that's currently ranked 30th, no discernible running game and no weapons? I mean, you know, the knocks at some point start fading away. The same way I had this conversation with somebody on Twitter today about the knock on him against the blitz, which has existed coming this year, and which was a very real thing. He had struggled against the blitz. Teams would blitz him, and he would give it to them. This year, he is crushing people against the blitz.
He's had three games in the fourth quarter this year because the Atlanta game was decided, the Tennessee game was decided, the Indy game had already been decided, the New England game had already been decided. He's had three games this year where he has had to make plays in the fourth quarter, and he's made them in all of them. You can argue A.J. Green made a heck of a catch in Baltimore. Yep, he did. But he saw the coverage, made a throw to give his guy a chance. His guy, we see it all the time. I mean, good quarterbacks give good receivers a chance to make
plays.
That's
their job.
The Carolina game. How many? I mean, he drove the. They scored plenty of points, and he kept driving them down the field
over and over again.
Over and over again.
And should have had the game winning drive there, exactly. If not for the chippy miss.
The chippy miss and the holding penalty and the regulation on Andre Smith. You know,
right.
So the three times he's had a chance to win games for you in the fourth quarter this year, he has put you in winnable situations, and in those circumstances, he's now 2-0-1.
Yep. And so I want to bring in a combination here of Marvin Lewis and Andrew Whitworth talking about Andy Dalton and really defending him. We've heard this before. I mean, we've heard these guys talk before, but I feel like now it has different value. Oh, actually, it does have different value. It has $96 million value to it now.
This is where we should bring in Pac-Man because he calls him the $100 million man. Got to do it.
Unfortunately, I don't
I know
have
you
the
don't.
I wish I did. When Pac-Man was asked just that, why do you believe in Andy Dalton? Well, you got to believe him. $100 million, man. You better believe in Andy Dalton. I mean, what a great quote from Adam. But I want to bring in Marvin. Here's Marvin Lewis and Andrew Whitworth both talking about Andy Dalton and what he did Sunday, and in particular what it means for how this team believes in him.
That's, you know, the reason that people love Andy here is because bad plays, he's so good at putting them out of his mind. Was that kind of the ultimate illustration of that last drive, putting everything that happened before behind it and gathering you guys together for the long drive?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's shows the kind of guy he is. I mean, you know, the thing with him is he's going to get hammered all the time just because, you know, he fights the same battle I fight. And that is, he wasn't a primetime pick. He wasn't a top 10 guy. And every time somebody gets a chance, they're going to, you know, try and find a reason to say he wasn't one, you know. And it's the same thing. So I get it. And that's why him and I are very close. And I understand it. And, am able to help him through it. And he's just a special guy and a special player.
Yeah. Does the teams kind of rally around him in that way, in that situation, particularly right at the beginning of that drive? You know,
Dalton was a guy that, there's not a guy in this locker room that doubts him one bit.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, we're happy as crap he's with us. Because, you know, the thing about him is since day one, he has never been a quarterback that not the entire offense is not available at the line of scrimmage. I mean, I can remember his rookie year, first road game in the Jets in the preseason. We got 3 and 4 checks at the line of scrimmage. You got guys that are starting now all over the league that there's no checks when they call plays because they really don't know what they're doing and stuff like that. So, you know, he's a guy that's always been special in that way.
How tough is that for a quarterback when you have two plays like that to kind of gather yourself? Do you feel like you need to talk to him at all at that point?
Probably don't want to have me talk to Andy in those situations. So. My message to Andy is a good one. And I think Jim Tressel told me this a long time ago, or when I first started here, that if each possession ends with a kick, you'll be in good shape. And, you know, your kick. And that's your job, a quarterback. Make each possession end in a kick. And, you know, the other 10 guys do their thing, you do your thing, and you're going to be all right. And, you know, that was my message to him starting the second half there when we got the lead. Just keep understanding it. Just keep it going that way. We had the bad play. We overcame it, and that was good.
A drive like that, though, at the very end, is that one of those that kind of one of the biggest reasons why you guys believe in Andy and why he's here? Because he can stay safe?
Because he can just block it out and go. That's the best, you know, one of Andy Dalton's best qualities, other than his accuracy at passing the football as a quarterback, but his ability also to block out the negative play, you know, and just keep going. I mean, we had the ball, obviously, good field position, and we flip it around. The next play, they score. I mean, so, you know, a lot of bad stuff there.
It's a very real thing, Skinny. I mean, it's just you view him differently, and I think there is validation when he's paid, like Adam said, like Pac-Man said, hey, $100 million, you better believe in him. Everybody in that locker room knows you're either on board with Andy Dalton or you're not going to be around here because this guy is the team leader. They have validated him as such, and he has, for the most part, delivered for you. Give him every knock you want. Call him the average passer and throw your stats at him. I mean, the guy keeps finding ways to win. He's the anti-Cutler.
Yeah,
he is.
No, right.
Cutler has the big
Cutler
arm.
Cutler has everything.
He has everything except the ability to win games and keep your team in and play smart and keep everybody rallied around you and all that type of stuff.
No, he polarizes everybody.
Yes, exactly. All you have to do is look.
And it's funny, you don't hear this from just a couple guys. I mean, any guy you ask about Andy in that locker room, offense, defense, they all believe in the guy. And some of the things starts with Hugh Jackson kind of reaffirming that. I mean, the whole training camp long, that's all he kept. You could just, he's my, whether he believed it or not, he was going to try to make everybody else believe it. He was going to try to make fans believe it, and he was going to make Andy believe, you're my guy, man, I'm behind you. We're going to make this work. Let's go. And for the most part, they've done that.
Yeah, they have done that. I'll run down some of Dalton's stats for you, which may not
They're not going to jump off the page at you.
They're not going to jump off the page at you, but, I mean, a 65.4% completion rate, that's the best
career
of
high.
His career. You know, he's got 1,641 yards, 7.6 yards per attempt, high for him.
Yep.
6 touchdowns to 4 picks, but he's also run in a few. They've run in a lot of touchdowns because they have had struggles in the red zone throwing the ball down there. And an 89.7 rating, which is a high for passer. He's high for his career.
Yeah, I'm going to throw a note. Let's still assume on Sunday he throws 3 touchdowns, no picks. It's Jacksonville, for goodness sakes. So at the halfway point, he'd be 9-4. That'd be 18-8. And if they're 18-8 and this team's 10-5-1 or 9-6-1, I think you'd have taken it before the year started, wouldn't you?
You'd taken the 8 for sure. As long as they're scoring enough.
And especially when you're missing what you're missing.
If you had a top 10 offense.
Right.
And 18-8 and a winning record, absolutely. If your offense had spiraled a bit and taken a step back and Dalton wasn't throwing as many touchdowns or whatever, but it's not a matter of throwing. Throwing touchdowns to me is a meaningless stat almost. I get it. You want to throw touchdowns.
I don't
touchdowns.
Know about that, Mr. Non-RBI.
Well, no, hold on. just hear me out. Right. As long as they're scoring.
Yeah.
You can lose a lot of touchdowns to the running game. I mean, if you throw a 75-yard bomb, the guy gets tackled to the one, and
that's
then
right.
Jeremy Hill runs it in, you know, I'm just saying that can get lost.
Agreed. I agree with you. I know what you're saying.
Not meaningless. You need to throw throw touchdowns. I'm not trying to turn this into a Saber debate here.
Thank you.
No, my point is that you can find there's ways around it.
It's almost
a win in baseball.
And go back to games 2 and 3. I mean, once you took control of games 2 and 3, you were going to run the football out anyway, and that's a huge part of it too.
Yeah, and you just they're scoring more points than they were than they were last year, outside of the one blip on the radar last week. I mean, they're scoring. Baltimore has given up. I did these numbers this morning: 13.5 points per game.
They led the NFL.
To the other five teams they've played this year, and 25 points a game against the Bengals into two games, 27 and 24, 23. So I think to me that's the biggest thing. And now we can jump off that to Mohamed Sanu because, let me ask you this. Let's have this debate and as part of the studio debate. Who is your Bengals MVP this year?
That's a good question.
Who would be your MVP of the first 7 games of the season?
I know where you're going with this because obviously we're transitioning to. I would probably pick the 3 corners as a combination.
So weak. This is just like your pick the other day. Just like on our preview when you said you had 2 predictions, one with AJ Green and one without AJ Green. You couldn't commit. You got to commit.
You got to pick
somebody. Man up.
The 3 corners to me have been a huge, huge key.
Pick one.
I can't separate them.
Oh, you can't. You need to grow.
Let me ask you: has Terrence Hall played discernibly better than Leon Hall?
Has Terrence Newman played better than Leon Hall?
Has Leon Hall played better than Pac-Man? Has Pac-Man played better than Terrence Newman? Has Terrence Newman? I mean, they've all 3 played extremely well.
You think those guys are more valuable than Dalton or
Sanu
at this point?
Yes, because you've gotten goose from the pass rush. So you better do what?
You better cover. Yeah, you better cover. There's no doubt about that.
But in order to play your game, I'll let you answer your own rhetorical question since we've segued
to
Mohamed Sanu.
It's not playing my game. I think there's a legitimate debate to be held about that. Like I would probably be.
It's like the 3 wise men. Can you separate the 3 wise men?
Yeah, the guy who brought the myrrh and get the hell out of here. That's garbage.
What? Yeah, myrrh's a good call.
Listen, I'm frankincense all day. All day I'm frankincense.
I'm gold.
I mean, don't even bring your myrrh in here, right?
I have no idea I came up with that kind of an analogy for the 3 corners.
It worked perfectly. Who of the 3 corners would be who's your frankincense, your gold, and your myrrh?
Exactly. My gold right now has got to be Pac-Man.
I think Pac-Man's got to be our gold. He's our gold. He's our scribe gold. That guy has been
Terrence Newman has been great.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, he has just been fabulous.
Someone's got to be myrrh, so you're saying Leon Hall's myrrh.
Leon Hall is myrrh.
And you hate that.
I hate myrrh.
So here's my portion of that, though. I think that I could make a pretty serious argument that Mohamed Sanu has been this team's MVP.
Absolutely.
Because I would say the offense has been what has carried them to some of their biggest wins. And Sanu, with everybody else gone, has been pretty much the lone playmaker left to make plays.
He's on pace for, what, 70-something catches, 1,000 plus yards?
Over 1,000 yards, some big, big plays in some games they need him. I mean, just when you're going through this adversity, he's found ways. I mean, you can credit a big portion of this win to him. I mean, I gave him my game ball after the game, and we had this discussion, who would you give the game ball to, Dalton or Sanu? And Dalton made so many plays and everything we just got done talking about, but man, the things that Sanu was doing when nobody else on the field had the ability really to do those was a huge deal.
Bengals scored 3 touchdowns in the game. Mohamed Sanu set up the game winner with the 53-yard catch. He set up the first one of the game with a 48-yard catch and run, and he set up the one in the third quarter off of a 26-yard reverse that took you down to the 25-yard line. I mean, 3 big plays from him put you in position to score all 3 touchdowns.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. So I would probably have that debate between Dalton and Sanu, and then your 3 wise men over there. We could probably come into the conversation, but you know, he's just been invaluable, and we see it week in and week out. And now the question becomes, though, with him, how does things change now when Green comes back, which I think it will either be Jacksonville or Cleveland, depending on how they want to deal with that, and we can get into that later. And when Eifert comes back, which I think at this point I can discern through the tea leaves of people we talk to, New Orleans is when that's going to happen.
Yeah.
So
I think we'll see him start practicing maybe a little.
Probably that after the it'll probably after the Cleveland game
because you got the time. It's almost
the,
like
yeah,
a mini
you've got extra days. Right. Yeah, they'll have him out there all week. There's no reason for them to bring him off unless they believe he's going to play, because
right.
You only have the window of a couple of weeks there. So, but anyway, so when he comes back, imagine how much more dangerous Mohamed Sanu then becomes, and maybe how do you see any problems adjusting to that role?
I thought about that today, and something that we may talk to him about on Wednesday, because I don't think he's a me guy, but I also think that once you become the man, it sometimes is hard to defer. And the one thing about the NFL though is, on given plays, you really aren't deferring. I mean, if you work yourself open against a certain coverage, that's where the ball is supposed to go.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a big downfield threat, so it's not like, if he gets single coverage, he's going to race by somebody. That's the one thing AJ obviously is capable of doing. So the more I thought about it, I thought, no, you know what? It'll actually be a great complement to one another, because you choose to single Mohamed. He may not get by you, but he's going to get, a 12-yard skinny post and catch it and take off if you don't get some help on him.
Yeah.
Whereas before, it may have been a case of teams not even thinking about that, and maybe even Andy not even thinking. He's got single coverage. I got AJ over here. Maybe I'll just jam one in. No, I'm going to trust this guy to take a 6-yard slant and turn it into 30 yards for me.
In a lot of situations, Andy Dalton has just kind of thrown the ball up to Sanu, which we talked about on the 53-yarder.
Which he's done to AJ Green countless times.
The question then for me would be, when A.J. Green and Tyler Eifert come back, does he still throw those balls? Does he still kind of throw some that maybe in the past he wouldn't have thrown up to Mohamed Sanu because he would have other guys and try to give him
a shot? No, because coverage will completely change. I mean, right now the coverage is absolutely – I mean, he talked about it today. I mean, the coverage is absolutely slanted and skewed his direction.
Mm-hmm.
It won't be that way when those guys come back. At that stage, it literally will be Andy deciding – based on this coverage, who is going to be my first read? Who's going to be the first guy I'm going to look for? Oh, yes, he's open. Good. Here you go.
Who's got the one-on-one, basically?
And that's where you saw in that first game. It was drop back, ball out of hand, no problem, because I know what coverage I'm going to get. I know where the ball's supposed to go. I'm not going to let the rush get to me. And that's why Andy's taking some sacks here of late. I mean, some of it is, he's trying to find the one guy that can make a play for him, and sometimes that's just not there. And guess what? Down you go.
And they've been forced into coming from behind a few times.
Correct.
So I mean, you got guys teeing off, but so that's going to be interesting to see what happens with Sanu. Let's dive into the health situation here and AJ Green and what you would do. Here's where we're at with this. We spoke with Marvin Lewis fairly candidly about AJ Green on Friday, and he said he thought he had taken big steps and made big progression during the week, and he did not practice any 3 days last week.
He did work on the side.
He worked on the side and ran around a little bit, and Marvin said basically Friday was a big day where he looked for the first time that he was doing football things on the side. He looked like a football player on the side. He didn't just look like a guy just trying to jog to figure out how it feels. And that was a big thing. And AJ said after the game, he said last week he was probably 40%, and now he's 80%, whatever any of that means. And also said he would play against Jacksonville. Said, asked to play against Jacksonville? Said, yes, I will play. So, we've heard that before, mm-hmm. And there's other things. Would you play him against Jacksonville?
No, I use the old baseball one here to some degree, that when you think a guy's ready, give him another day.
Yeah.
Give him another day or two. And if this was Pittsburgh or Denver or Baltimore, if he could have played, then you have to run him out there. But in a game like this, I know I hate to say that, because this isn't like you're playing Louisiana Monroe and homecoming as Alabama and you can sit your star tailback and your star wide receiver and still roll up a 45-7 win very comfortably. That doesn't happen in the NFL. But you should still be able to handle Jacksonville without him. Maybe you suit him up. Maybe if things don't go so well, you give it a few snaps. But, you suit him up with the idea of, we hope we don't have to put you in, and maybe we do, and if we do, well, then so be it. But
you
I just
suit him up and hope to run it up real quick.
Correct.
Yeah.
Maybe you do trot him out there for a handful of plays. Maybe he does. Maybe he starts and he plays in certain packages and certain times if I don't want to say on rundowns because you'll be tipping your hand, but if there's certain things you want to do, maybe in the run game, you just get him out of there for a few snaps. It's just, it's hit or miss. And I thought you asked the valid question, and it's one that I've been asked as well, and it's one that's not hard to look at. You have a game a few days later. I mean, so if he goes out and he has some soreness after this game, and you could have rested him in theory, then he comes back 4 or 5 days later. You don't think the soreness isn't still going to be there, and then we keep going through this? So to me, I sit him out till that Thursday night game unless it's an absolute desperate circumstance on Sunday. I don't think I'd deactivate him. I think I'd keep him active and then just see how, kind of play it by ear how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, there would be a lot of value to sitting him down against Jacksonville and just playing him full go, ready to go against Cleveland, because you mentioned the small time span between, but then you have 10 days off after until you play at New Orleans, and so now even more time for it to rest.
Yes.
And it's a really easing him back in process.
And then if it continues to get bad, then obviously it's so chronic that nothing's ever going to fix it this year other than just shut it down or just keep resting it until you can say, all right, we'll try it again. I mean, at that stage, it's become a real chronic problem.
I would not be opposed to keeping him active against Jacksonville and just hoping you're up by 3 touchdowns
at
halftime. Right. And maybe he plays a half.
Again, he doesn't have to be out there every snap on offense either. I mean, you can run.
Maybe
you can rotate roll some wide receivers through there too.
Yeah. So I would not be opposed to that, and it also gives him a little bit
of
a warm up
game conditions.
Test it, see how it goes, and then you're ready to go for the game, a big game against Cleveland. But you know, if you have to trot him out there and he plays 75 snaps or something like that, to me, and I don't think that they'll do that.
I don't either. I don't either.
I mean, and I'm going to make an example of something that happened and know exactly what you're going to say afterwards. He played a week later after hurting it in Atlanta when he played against Tennessee.
It's true.
Against a garbage Tennessee team. Now, that said, they didn't know at that point in time that this was going to be something that really could be a problem all year long. Everyone has made the clarification now that his foot is not going to be 100% throughout the year.
Right.
So it's just a matter of how much pain he can deal with while he plays. I think they're much more aware now of giving it any rest you possibly can.
And keep in mind, coming out of that game on Sunday, and I wish I knew this, you'd know this better than I do. Normally you have the Monday where guys come in, it's a light day, it's just working the kinks out, it's maybe getting a workout in, something. Well, there's no practice on a Monday after a Sunday game. Tuesday is the mandatory league day off. You have none of that, correct? I mean, none of it leading into that Thursday night game. I'm going to guess the Monday is still light, but then you're going Tuesday, Wednesday in preparation for that Thursday game.
Yeah, there's no off day in there. They won't practice every day.
You're right, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, It's a quick turn, and the problem most players can talk about is they don't ever really feel right from games until about Friday of those weeks. It bangs them up for so long.
Yep.
So, especially when you're talking
about that's with getting
injury.
A Monday kind of rest day and a Tuesday day off day. And, you know, some of the veterans, we see it take a Wednesday off for one more extra rest or take a Thursday off for one more extra rest. You got none of that luxury next week.
Yeah. We'll see what happens as the week goes on. But, I think the scenario we talked about where he just plays, he's active, but they try to get him out, hopefully run it up and get him out, is probably their best case scenario.
So when you see Marvin going for 2 after every touchdown, you'll know why.
Yeah, exactly. Every play is a bomb.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's get this going. Calling timeouts.
Blitzing every now.
Opening drive.
Yep.
You know, absolutely.
What is he doing? He wants to get the guy out.
He wants to get up by 21 and forget about it. What do you think about this defense right now? Were you encouraged by what happened on Sunday?
Oh, a little bit. I was surprised at times when Baltimore didn't run the ball like 4th and goal on the first drive when they just mowed right down the field running the ball. But they also, don't forget, they suffered. Marshall Yanda went out for a little bit of time in that game, and he's obviously had a great, I mean, we're talking Pro Bowl-level season for them, and I'm sure that affected some of the things they wanted to do. The run defense was okay. I thought the pass rush was a little bit better. And honestly, Joe Flacco came in extremely hot and really never got hot.
Yeah.
I think some of that, I did the math. Not the three wide receivers, all their wide receivers from the world-famous Campy Campanero to Steve Smith Sr. to Torrey Smith to Marlon Brown, their wide receivers combined for 9 catches for 92 yards, and they've been hitting some home runs of late. Yeah, I know they were without Owen Daniels, and they were without Dennis Pitta and all that stuff, but you know, their wide receivers had been hitting home runs. The longest completion was 29 yards, and that was a screen pass or dump off to Tolliver.
Yeah. Let me tell you, Owen Daniels not being able to play was a huge blow to Baltimore.
No
the
question.
Way tight ends have been tearing up the Bengals, that was some of the best news that they could have got. And, of course, everyone's dealing with injuries. The Bengals are out AJ Green, a number of players. So, I mean, it goes both ways. But that in particular hit the Bengals right where they needed it, the way tight ends have given them fits.
And the most encouraging thing to me, and granted he didn't play the same way the second half, and unfortunately because of my writing duties, I don't get a chance to put the glasses on every play like I do the first half. Geno Atkins, the first half was I don't want to say he was back. That's jumping the gun
he
a little bit.
He was not back, but he was as good as he's been this year.
Yes, and you know, the numbers don't lie. He came in with seven. I looked this up. He had played, and now I'm drawing. I want to say 316 snaps in the first six games. He had seven tackles, none of those for loss. A half a sack, which you and I both kind of wink, wink, nod, nod. I think it was like a little pat on his head to let him have a stack because it still doesn't look like a half a sack to me in the Indianapolis game, and it came after the fact, actually. That's all he had. Sunday in the first half, he had four tackles. Two for loss, one being a quarterback sack, and a forced fumble, all in one half.
Yeah, all in one
half.
That's
what he can do.
Yeah, and if you have that guy, the whole game changes. I mean, I remember every year talking with Mike Zimmer about where it all starts, and he said, it's all Geno.
It is.
It all starts there, because when you have the guy that is that disruptive right up front, everybody gets ripple effect off of that.
Every blocking scheme then is designed, no matter if it's a run or a pass, it's designed to how do we keep this guy from killing us?
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And you're right, he was not back. And he still, you know, even the second half wasn't as productive, and his sack was kind of a coverage sack. But you saw a few plays where you saw some of that burst that you're used to. He's still definitely not the guy that they need him to be, but you know, it's we're coming up on the night Halloween last year was when he tore his ACL. I mean, it's just coming up on a year, so keep in perspective how far ahead of schedule he actually is. But for all that, he's actually even being out there at all.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, well, he's not even been close to what. I mean, not even he's been a shell to some degree of that. The drop off from him not being in there is humongous.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
tell you how much at least him being in there has helped you some.
Yeah, because the what's happening behind him has been a whole lot of nothing.
Yes.
And I think he'll be helped by Brandon Thompson coming
back.
Yeah,
exactly.
See on Sunday. I think he was the epitome of what we talked about earlier, that you give him one more week when you think they're ready. I think Thompson probably could have played against Baltimore.
Yeah, he
Baltimore.
Worked limited. I think he worked limited all three days.
He was questionable, yep. And so I think you'll see him back this week, and that's going to be a big add to the rotation as well. So things are... Hey, one win, and all of a sudden everything is looking up for the Bengals. But in the NFL, it can all change real quick, so we'll wait and see what happens with that. You got anything else?
I got nothing else.
We can get out of here.
I will say this. Fans, and I don't implore you because it's not my place, it's not my nickel, it's not my dime. For those of you that if you want to see this game on Sunday, you will not see it on local TV.
No,
I will make that dyed-in-the-wool absolute promise to that.
Yeah.
Honestly, let's do the over-under right now. Let's set it. 46,000?
Oh, no. I won't go that low. You going 46?
I'll go 46,305.
46,305. I say it'll be 51-1.
Now you're probably
51,001. Yeah. Is my
so again?
Is
I'm
my,
not imploring if you don't. It's your nickel. It's your dime. It's
you
your
just
block.
Won't be able to see.
You just won't be able to see the game. If you don't go to the game, you won't be able to see the game.
Yeah.
So you can read our stuff.
Yeah. Which is good for
which
us.
Which is good for us.
So actually, don't go to the game. Give us our clicks.
Yep.
We'll have all your video. We'll post vines. All those things that you didn't get to see of what happened. Although, I mean, let's be honest, it might not be all that watchable.
I think you and I predicted something like 41-7 before the year started, almost half jokingly.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not kidding. I think 41-7.
Well, you look at Jacksonville, and Blake Bortles, you know, hasn't been in there that long.
Has he thrown more?
12 picks already.
Has he thrown more
than
pick
anybody.
Sixes than touchdowns?
Four pick sixes.
Yeah.
He has four pick sixes in out of his 12 interceptions.
How many touchdowns
has he thrown? I don't have that.
I think he's thrown more pick sixes than touchdowns, I think.
It's very possible. I mean, it's just. You're starting now maybe to see why they didn't want to start Blake Bortles right at the beginning of the season, because they didn't feel like he was ready at all.
Not ready.
Yeah, apparently not. Apparently not. Here, I'm pulling up Bortles stats right now. Here you go. Blake Bortles, yeah, he has six touchdowns.
Okay, well, good for him.
Six touchdowns to 12 interceptions. So that Bengals secondary
feast,
sitting back and just waiting for him to throw you some.
Pac-Man wants him a pick six.
He really does. He's been planning his – he knows what his big thing's going to be when he gets in the end zone. He told us that at the beginning of the season. He's got it, but he's not telling us.
Pac-Man may have a chance on Sunday to return a punt, a kickoff, and an interception for a touchdown in the same game.
Is that your prediction?
I may do that.
That's not going
to
happen.
Brings me back to the Lamar Parrish days. You want me to go back to the Lamar Parrish days?
Oh,
back in the day. There it is.
Yay.
Old guy moment.
Old guy moment. Oh, I love whenever we can do the old guy. Tell me a Lamar Parrish story.
Lamar Parrish, one of the best of all time. Returned two punts in a game for a touchdown at one point. Returned two interceptions in a game for a touchdown. Once, I believe, returned a fumble and a blocked field goal for a touchdown. I think he has the fifth or sixth most non-offensive touchdown, or actually, sorry, defensive touchdowns in NFL history. One of the greats. Should be a Hall of Famer. Absolutely should be in the Hall of Fame.
Lamar Parrish, yep. That's it.
I know I sound like Chick Ludwig with that, but absolutely he should be in the Hall of Fame.
Stud.
He was a stud.
Anytime he touched the ball, Armageddon.
It was Armageddon. He was great.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I mean, you're right. He's one of those that deserves to be recognized somewhere inside of Paul Brown Stadium.
He, the Rattler, Ken Riley, and Ken Anderson. Those would be my three Bengals soapbox Hall of Fame guys that should be in the first ever Bengals Ring of Honor.
The first,
not just them, but they would be among the group.
Don't hold your breath on.
No,
that
I will not.
So all right.
Why honor the past?
So it's time. It's time for us to. It's time for us to get out of here. And I think we have a unanimous decision on what we want to be our song. So it's Jacksonville week, right?
Yes.
So we got to go to North Florida.
Yes.
For our music this week. You can catch that all week on the blog. I got some good ones for you that come
you
up.
You pulled
this
out,
week.
And you know what? I am a huge Southern Fried Rock fan. I never knew that part of Leonard Skinner was from
Van Zandt.
Yeah, I never knew
from
Jacksonville. It was from Jacksonville.
So I started with Skinner today, and there's plenty more good ones that you'll get throughout the rest of the week. I'm still deciding if I'm going to torture you with Limp Bizkit or not. I'm not sure if I'm going to break him out.
You may have to just break it out. This is like a Friday breakout.
Oh, let's just see how my week goes.
Okay.
If I feel like it's been a rough week, things aren't going well.
You're pulling it out.
Break Stuff is coming out. That used to be my angry song. I love that song whenever I was a little too
angry. Did you have like a CD that just said the anger mix?
Yo, yeah. No, I did not. I did not have a CD. I didn't need one. If you just listen to one, Break Stuff, like I don't even need the whole song. Give me half of it.
That's all you need.
I'm good. I'm fairly angry at that point. So Petty's from Gainesville.
I never knew that one either.
Tom Petty is from Gainesville.
One of my favorites.
You've seen Petty live, I
absolutely.
Assume. I've seen him live.
One of my favorites.
I was shocked at how good his concert was.
Oh, he's fabulous.
I didn't expect him to
fabulous.
Be so good.
Because he's just so mellow, man.
And he really jams out. Like he doesn't just play the songs. He really goes
Petty's
off.
Tremendous.
Huge Petty fan. So when going through the Petty discography, we saw one that that we both agree fits this particular week. Won't Back Down.
Bengals didn't back down on Sunday.
The Bengals didn't back down with everything going the wrong way.
Defense with a goal line stand.
Yep.
Defense after an interception. Hold them to a field goal, which ended up being pretty big because it only made it 24-20.
Yep.
Andy Dalton after his god-awful left-handed Gus Frerotte moment.
Yep.
No, he did not back down.
And he won't back
he
down.
He won't back down.
Apparently this team won't back down as the season was imploding.
Because there's no easy way out.
There's no easy way out. So let's bring in Tom Petty. Thanks, Tom Petty,
they'll
for
stand
showing
their
up.
Ground.
Here's
and they won't. They won't back down.
They absolutely won't back down. Remember, come down to more in Logger House every Tuesday, 7 o'clock. This Tuesday, Icky Woods at Moreland Logger House, and then come back next Tuesday. I don't know if our guest for next week, I know who it is. I'm pretty sure it's locked in, but
I'm
I don't know if
I'm complete confirmation.
I'm waiting for complete confirmation, but he might be referred to as Murr. So we'll see. I really can't.
You have to go back early in the podcast to listen for that.
So
now,
if you only listen to this, you wouldn't even know. So make sure you come. Regardless, come down. Always a lot of fun. 7 o'clock more in Logger House. We'll be there every week for Beyond the Stripes, and then of course all your coverage here. Podcast every Tuesday morning. This thing's posted up, so make sure you give it a listen. Your workout, your drive, or whatever. Thank you, Richard Skinner. Thank you, Tom Petty, Paul Leonard Jr. And we'll talk to you next week.
understand.